Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, also known as Krishna Book, today's chapter number 58, Five Queens Married by Krishna. Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarariva Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Harenama, Harenama, Harenama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nastyeva, 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 Gatir Anyata. I always like to begin my preaching with these two mantras because they are my bread and butter, heart and soul, my mission statement. And of course, this Krishna book is given to us by the loving mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 58, Five Queens Married by Krishna. As mentioned in the last chapter, there was a great rumor that the five Pandava brothers, along with their mother Kunti, had died. According to the plan of the sons of Dhritarashtra, in a fire accident in the house of Lak in which they were living. But then the five brothers were detected at the marriage ceremony of Draupadi. So another rumor spread that the Pandavas and their mother were not dead. It was a rumor, but actually it was so. They returned to their capital city, Hastinapur, and people saw them face to face. When this news was carried to Krishna and Balaram, Krishna wanted to see them personally, and therefore he decided to go to Hastinapur. This time, Krishna visited Hastinapur in state as a royal prince, accompanied by his commander-in-chief, Yuyudhana, and by many other soldiers. He had not actually been invited to visit the city, yet he went to see the Pandavas out of his affection for his great devotees. He visited the Pandavas without warning, and all of them got up from their respective seats as soon as they saw him. Krishna is called Mukunda because as soon as one comes in constant touch with Krishna or sees him in full Krishna consciousness, one immediately becomes freed from all material anxieties. Not only that, but one is immediately blessed with all spiritual bliss. Receiving Krishna, the Pandavas were enlivened, just as if awakened from unconsciousness or loss of life. When a man is lying unconscious, his senses and the different parts of his body are inactive. But when he regains his consciousness, the senses immediately become active. Similarly, the Pandavas receive Krishna as if they had just regained their consciousness. And so they were very much enlivened. Lord Krishna embraced every one of them, and by the touch of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Pandavas immediately became freed from all reactions of material contamination and were therefore smiling in spiritual bliss. By seeing the face of Lord Krishna, everyone was transcendentally satisfied. Lord Krishna, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was playing the part of an ordinary human being, and thus he immediately touched the feet of Yudhishthir and Bhima, because they were his two older cousins. Arjuna embraced Krishna as a friend of the same age, whereas the two younger brothers, namely Nakula and Sahadeva, touched the lotus feet of Krishna to show him respect. After an exchange of greetings, according to social etiquette, befitting the position of the Pandavas and Lord Krishna, Krishna was offered an exalted seat. When he was comfortably seated, the newly married Draupadi, young and very beautiful, in her natural feminine gracefulness, came before Lord Krishna to offer her respectful greetings. The Yadavas, who accompanied Krishna to Hastinapur, were also very respectfully received. Specifically, Satyaki, or Yuyudan, was also offered a nice seat. In this way, when everyone else was properly seated, the five brothers took their seats near Lord Krishna. After meeting with the five brothers, Lord Krishna personally went to visit Srimati Kunti Devi, the mother of the Pandavas, who was also Krishna's paternal aunt. In offering his respects to his aunt, Krishna also touched her feet. Kunti Devi's eyes became wet, and in great love, she feelingly embraced Lord Krishna. She then inquired from him about the well-being of her paternal family members, her brother Vasudev, his wife, and other members of the family. Similarly, Krishna also inquired from his aunt about the welfare of the Pandava family. Although Kunti Devi was related to Krishna by family ties, she knew immediately after meeting him that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She remembered the past calamities of her life and how by the grace of Krishna she and her sons, the Pandavas, had been saved. She knew perfectly well that without Krishna's grace, no one could have saved them from the fire accident designed by the sons of Dhritarashtra. In a choked-up voice, she began to narrate before Krishna the history of their life. My dear Krishna, I remember the day when you sent my brother Akura to gather information about us. This means that you always remember us automatically. When you sent Akura, I could understand that there was no possibility of our being put in danger. All good fortune in our life began when you sent Akura to us. Since then, I have been convinced that we are not without protection. We may be put into various types of dangerous conditions by our family members, the Kurus. But I am confident that you remember us and always keep us safe and sound. Even ordinary devotees who simply think of you are always immune to all kinds of material danger. And what to speak of ourselves who are personally remembered by you? So, my dear Krishna, there is no question of bad luck. We are always in an auspicious position because of your grace. Yet, although you have bestowed a special favor on us, people should not mistakenly think that you are partial to some and inattentive to others. You make no such distinction. No one is your favorite, and no one is your enemy. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are equal to everyone, and everyone can take advantage of your special protection. The fact is that although you are equal to everyone, you are especially inclined to the devotees who always think of you. The devotees are related to you by ties of love. As such, they cannot forget you even for a moment. You are present in everyone's heart. But because the devotees always remember you, you respond accordingly. Although a mother has affection for all her children, she takes special care of the one who is fully dependent. I know certainly, my dear Krishna, that being seated in everyone's heart, you always create auspicious situations for your unalloyed devotees. Then King Yudhishthira also praised Krishna as the Supreme Personality and universal friend of everyone. But because Krishna was taking special care of the Pandavas, King Yudhishthira said, "My dear Krishna, we do not know what sort of pious activities we have executed in our past lives that have made you so kind and gracious to us. We know very well that the great mystics who always engage in meditation to capture you do not find it easy to obtain such grace, nor can they draw any personal attention from you. I cannot understand why you are so kind to us. We are not yogis. On the contrary, we are attached to material contaminations. We are householders dealing in politics, worldly affairs. I do not know why you are so kind to us." Being requested by King Yudhishthira, Krishna agreed to stay in Hastinapur for 4 months during the rainy season. The 4 months of the rainy season are called Chaturmasya. During this period, the generally itinerant preachers and Brahmins stop at a certain place and live under rigid regulative principles. Although Lord Krishna is above all regulative principles, he agreed to stay at Hastinapur out of affection for the Pandavas. Taking this opportunity of Krishna's residence in Hastinapur, all the citizens of the city got the privilege of seeing him now and then, and thus they merged into transcendental bliss simply by seeing Lord Krishna face to face. One day, while Krishna was staying with the Pandavas, he and Arjuna prepared themselves to go to the forest to hunt. Both of them sat down in Arjuna's chariot, which flew a flag with the picture of Hanuman. Arjuna's special chariot is always marked with the picture of Hanuman, and therefore he is also known as Kapi Dvaj. Kapi means Hanuman, and Dvaja means flag. Thus, Arjuna prepared to go to the forest with his bow and infallible arrows. He dressed himself with suitable protective garments, for he was to practice for the time when he would be killing many enemies on the battlefield. He specifically entered that part of the forest where there were many tigers, deer, and various other animals. The reason Krishna went with Arjuna was not to practice animal killing, for Krishna doesn't have to practice anything. He is self-sufficient. He accompanied Arjuna to see how he was practicing, because in the future he would have to kill many animals. After entering the forest, Arjuna killed many tigers, boars, bison, gavayas, a kind of wild animal, rhinoceroses, deer, hares, porcupines, and similar other animals, which he pierced with his arrows. Some of the dead animals that were fit to be offered in sacrifices were carried by servants and sent to King Yudhishthira. The ferocious animals, such as tigers and rhinoceroses, were killed only to stop disturbances in the forest. Since there are many sages and saintly persons who are residents of the forest, it is the duty of the Kshatriya kings to keep even the forest in a peaceful condition for living. Arjuna felt tired and thirsty from hunting, and therefore he went to the bank of the Yamuna along with Krishna. When both the Krishnas, namely Krishna and Arjuna, reached the bank of the Yamuna, they washed their hands, feet, and mouths, and drank the clear water of the Yamuna. Arjuna is sometimes called Krishna, as is Draupadi, who is known as Krishna. While resting and drinking water, they saw a beautiful girl of marriageable age walking alone on the bank of the Yamuna. Krishna asked his friend Arjuna to go forward and ask the girl who she was. And by the order of Krishna, Arjuna immediately approached the girl, who was very beautiful. She had an attractive body, nice glittering teeth, and a smiling face. Arjuna inquired, "My dear girl, you are so beautiful with your raised breast. May I ask who you are? We are surprised to see you loitering here alone. What is your purpose in coming here? We can guess only that you are searching after a suitable husband. If you don't mind, you can disclose your purpose. I shall try to satisfy you." The beautiful girl was the river Yamuna personified. She replied, "Sir, I am the daughter of the sun god, and I am now performing penance in austerity to have Lord Vishnu as my husband. I think he is the Supreme Person and just suitable to become my husband. I disclose my desire thus because you wanted to know it. My dear sir, I know that you are the hero, Arjuna. So I may further say that I shall not accept anyone as my husband besides Lord Vishnu, because he is the only protector of all living entities and the bestower of liberation for all conditioned souls. I shall be thankful unto you if you pray to Lord Vishnu to be pleased with me. The girl Yamuna knew it well, that Arjuna was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, and that if he would pray, Krishna would never deny his request. To approach Krishna directly may sometimes be futile, but to approach Krishna through his devotee is sure to be successful. Kalindi further told Arjuna, "My name is Kalindi, and I live within the waters of the Yamuna. My father was kind enough to construct a special house for me within the waters of the Yamuna, and I have vowed to remain in the water as long as I cannot find Lord Krishna." Arjuna duly carried the message of the girl Kalindi to Krishna, although Krishna, as the super soul in everyone's heart, already knew everything. Without further discussion, Krishna immediately accepted Kalindi and asked her to sit down on the chariot. Then all of them approached King Yudhishthira. After this, Krishna was asked by King Yudhishthira to help in constructing a suitable house to be planned by the great architect Vishvakarma, the celestial engineer in the heavenly kingdom. Krishna immediately called for Vishvakarma and made him construct a wonderful city according to the desire of King Yudhishthira. When this city was constructed, Maharaj Yudhishthira requested Krishna to live with them a few days more to give them the pleasure of his association. Lord Krishna accepted the request of Maharaj Yudhishthira and remained there for many days more. In the meantime, Krishna engaged in the pastime of offering the Kandava forest, which belonged to King Indra. Krishna wanted to give it to Agni, the fire god. The Kandava forest contained many varieties of drugs, and Agni required to eat them for rejuvenation. Agni, however, did not touch the Kandava forest directly, but requested Krishna to help him. Agni knew that Krishna was very much pleased with him because Agni had formerly given him the Sudarshan disc. So, in order to satisfy Agni, Krishna became the chariot driver of Arjuna, and both went to the Kandava forest. After Agni had eaten up the Kandava forest, he was very much pleased. At this time, he offered Arjuna a special bow known as Gandiva. He also gave him 4 white horses, 1 chariot, and an invincible quiver with 2 special arrows considered to be talismans, which had so much power that no warrior could counteract them. When the Kandava forest was being devoured by the fire god Agni, there was a demon of the name Maya who was saved by Arjuna from the devastating fire. For this reason, that former demon became a great friend of Arjuna, and in order to please Arjuna, he constructed a nice assembly house within the city constructed by Vishvakarma. This assembly house had some corners so puzzling that when Duryodhana came to visit the house, he was misdirected, accepting water as land and land as water. Duryodhana was thus insulted by the opulence of the Pandavas, and he became their determined enemy. After a few days, Lord Krishna took permission from King Yudhishthira to return to Dwarka. When he got permission, he returned to his country, accompanied by Satyaki, the leader of the Yadus, who were living in Hastinapur with him. Kalindi also returned with Krishna to Dwarka. After returning, Krishna consulted many learned astrologers to find the suitable moment at which to marry Kalindi, and then he married her with great pomp. This marriage ceremony gave much pleasure to the relatives of both parties, and all of them enjoyed the great occasion. The kings of Avantipur, known as Ujjain, were named Vindhya and Anuvindhya. Both kings were under the control of Duryodhan. They had one sister named Mitravinda, who was very qualified, learned, and elegant girl, the daughter of one of Krishna's aunts. She was to select her husband in an assembly of princes, but she strongly desired to have Krishna as her husband. During the assembly for selecting her husband, Krishna was present, and he forcibly carried away Mitravinda in the presence of all the other royal princes. Being unable to resist Krishna, the princes were left simply looking at one another. After this incident, Krishna married the daughter of the king of Kosala. The king of Kosala province was called Nagnajit. He was very pious and was a follower of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. His most beautiful daughter was named Satya. Sometimes Satya was called Nagnajiti, for she was the daughter of King Nagnajit. King Nagnajit wanted to give the hand of his daughter to any prince who could defeat 7 very strong stalwart bulls maintained by him. No one in the princely order could defeat the 7 bulls, and therefore no one could claim the hand of Satya. The seven bulls were very strong, and they could hardly bear even the smell of any prince. Many princes visited this kingdom and tried to subdue the bulls, but instead of controlling them, they themselves were defeated. This news spread all over the country, and when Krishna heard that one could achieve the girl Satya only by defeating the seven bulls, he prepared himself to go to the kingdom of Kosala. With many soldiers, he approached that part of the country known as Ayodhya, making a regular state visit. When it became known to the king of Kosala that Krishna had come to ask the hand of his daughter, he was very much pleased. With great respect and pomp, he welcomed Krishna to the kingdom. When Krishna approached him, he offered the Lord a suitable sitting place and articles for reception. Everything appeared very elegant. Krishna also offered him respectful obeisances, thinking him to be his future father-in-law. When Satya understood that Krishna himself had come to marry her, she was very much pleased that the husband of the goddess of fortune had so kindly come there to accept her. For a long time, she had cherished the idea of marrying Krishna and was following the principles of austerity to obtain her desired husband. She then began to think, "If I have performed any pious activities to the best of my ability, and if I have sincerely thought all along to have Krishna as my husband, then Krishna may be pleased to fulfill my long cherished desire." She then began to offer prayers to Krishna mentally, thinking, "I do not know how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be pleased with me. He is the master and lord of everyone. Even the goddess of fortune, whose place is next to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and many other demigods of different planets, always offer their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. The Lord also sometimes descends to this earth in different incarnations to fulfill the desire of his devotees. He is so exalted and great that I do not know how to satisfy him." She thought that the Supreme Personality of Godhead could be pleased only out of his own causeless mercy upon the devotee. Otherwise, there was no means to please him. Lord Chaitanya, in the same way, prayed in his Shikshashtaka verses, "My Lord, I am your eternal servant. Somehow or other, I have fallen into this material existence. If you kindly pick me up and fix me as an atom of dust at your lotus feet, it will be a great favor to your eternal servant." The Lord can be pleased only by a humble attitude in service spirit. The more we render service unto the Lord under the direction of the spiritual master, the more we make advancement on the path approaching the Lord. We cannot demand any grace or mercy from the Lord because of our service rendered to him. He may accept or not accept our service, but the only means to satisfy the Lord is through the service attitude and nothing else. King Nudnijit was a pious king, and having Lord Krishna in his palace, he began to worship him to the best of his knowledge and ability. He presented himself before the Lord thus: "My dear Lord, you are the proprietor of the whole cosmic manifestation, and you are Narayan, the resting place of all creatures. You are self-sufficient and pleased with your personal opulences. So how can I offer you anything? And how could I please you by such an offering? It is not possible, because I am an insignificant living being. Actually, I have no ability to render any service unto you." Krishna is the Supersoul of all living creatures, so he could understand the mind of Satya. He was also very much pleased with the respectful worship of the king in offering him a sitting place, eatables, a residence, and so on. He was appreciative, therefore, that both the girl and her father were eager to have him as their intimate relative. He smiled and in a grave voice said, "My dear King Nudnijit, you know very well that anyone in the princely order who is regular in his position will never ask anything from anyone, however exalted he may be. Such requests by a Kshatriya king have been deliberately forbidden by the learned Vedic followers. If a Kshatriya breaks this regulation, his action is condemned by learned scholars. But in spite of this rigid regulative principle, I am asking you for the hand of your beautiful daughter just to establish our relationship in return for your great reception of me. You may also be pleased to be informed that in our family tradition, there is no scope for our offering anything in exchange for accepting your daughter. We cannot pay any price you may impose for delivering her." In other words, Krishna wanted the hand of Satya from the king without fulfilling the condition of defeating the seven bulls. After hearing the statement of Lord Krishna, King Nudnijit said, "My dear Lord, you are the reservoir of all pleasure, all opulences, and all qualities. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, always lives on your chest. Under these circumstances, who can be a better husband for my daughter? Both my daughter and I have always prayed for this opportunity. You are the chief of the Yadu dynasty, so you may kindly know that from the very beginning, I have made a vow to marry my daughter to a suitable candidate, one who can come out victorious in the test I have devised. I have imposed this test just to understand the prowess and position of my intended son-in-law. You, Lord Krishna, are the chief of all heroes. I am sure you will be able to bring these seven bulls under control without any difficulty. Until now, they have never been subdued by any prince. Anyone who has attempted to bring them under control has simply had his limbs broken. King Nugnajit then continued his request. Krishna, if you'll kindly bridle the seven bulls and bring them under control, then undoubtedly you will be selected as the desired husband of my daughter, Satya. After hearing this statement, Krishna could understand that the king did not want to break his vow. Thus, in order to fulfill his desire, he tightened his belt and prepared to fight with the bulls. He immediately divided himself into seven Krishnas, and each one of them immediately caught hold of a bull and bridled its nose, thus bringing it under control as if it were a plaything. Krishna's dividing himself into seven is very significant. It was known to Satya, the daughter of King Nugnajit, that Krishna had already married many other wives, but still she was attached to Krishna. In order to encourage her, Krishna immediately expanded himself into seven. The purport is, Krishna is one, but he has unlimited forms of expansions. He married many thousands of wives, but this does not mean that while he was with one wife, the others were bereft of his association. Krishna could associate with each and every wife by his expansions. When Krishna brought the bulls under his control by bridling their noses, their strength and pride were immediately smashed. The name and fame which the bulls had attained was thus vanquished. When Krishna had the bulls bridled, he pulled them strongly, just as a child pulls a toy wooden bull. Upon seeing this advantage of Krishna, King Nugnajit became very much astonished and immediately, with great pleasure, brought his daughter Satya before Krishna and handed her over to him. Krishna also immediately accepted Satya as his wife. Then there was a marriage ceremony with great pomp. The queens of King Nugnajit were also very much pleased because their daughter Satya got Krishna as her husband. Since the king and queens were very much pleased on this auspicious occasion, there was a celebration all over the city in honor of the marriage. Everywhere were heard the sounds of the conch shell and kettle drum and various other vibrations of music and song. The learned Brahmins showered their blessings upon the newly married couple. In jubilation, all the inhabitants of the city dressed themselves with colorful garments and ornaments. King Nugnajit was so much pleased that he gave a dowry to his daughter and son-in-law as follows. First of all, he gave them 10,000 cows and 3,000 well-dressed young maidservants, ornamented up to their necks. This system of dowry is still current in India, especially for Kshatriya princes. When a Kshatriya prince is married, at least a dozen maidservants of similar age are given along with the bride. After giving the cows and maidservants, the king enriched the dowry by giving 9,000 elephants and 100 times more chariots than elephants. This means that he gave 900,000 chariots. And he gave 100 times more horses than chariots, or 90 million horses, and 100 times more men servants than horses. Royal princes maintain such men servants and maid servants with all provisions as if they were their own children or family members. After giving this dowry, the king of Kosala province bade his daughter and great son-in-law be seated on a chariot and allowed them to go to their home, guarded by a division of well-equipped soldiers. As they traveled fast to their new home, the king's heart was enlivened with affection for them. Before this marriage of Satya with Krishna, there had been many competitive engagements with the bulls of King Nagnajit and many other princes of the Yadu dynasty and of other dynasties as well had tried to win the hand of Satya. When the frustrated princes of the other dynasties heard that Krishna was successful in getting the hand of Satya by subduing the bulls, naturally they became envious. So while Krishna was traveling to Dwaraka, all the frustrated and defeated princes encircled him and began to shower their arrows on the bridal party. When they attacked Krishna's party and shot arrows like incessant torrents of rain, Arjuna, the best friend of Krishna, took charge of that challenge, and he alone very easily drove them off to please his great friend Krishna on the occasion of his marriage. Arjuna immediately took up his bow, Gandiva, and chased away all the princes, exactly as a lion drives away all small animals simply by chasing them. Arjuna drove away all the princes without killing even one of them. After this, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, Lord Krishna, along with his newly married wife and the huge dowry, entered the city of Dwaraka with great pomp. Krishna then lived there with his wife very peacefully. Besides Kunti Devi, Krishna had another paternal aunt. Her name was Shrutakirti, and she was married and lived in Kakeyi province. She had a daughter whose name was Bhadra. Bhadra wanted to marry Krishna, and her brother handed her over to him unconditionally. Krishna accepted her as his bona fide wife. Thereafter, Krishna married a daughter of the king of Madras province. Her name was Lakshmana, and she had all good qualities. She was also forcibly married by Krishna, who took her in the same way that Garuda snatched the jar of nectar from the hands of the demigods. Krishna kidnapped this girl in the presence of many other princes in the assembly of her Swayamvara. The Swayamvara is a ceremony in which the bride can select her own husband from an assembly of many princes. The description of Krishna's marriage with the five girls mentioned in this chapter is not sufficient. He had many other thousands of wives besides them. Krishna accepted the other thousands of wives after killing a demon named Bomasura. All these thousands of girls were held captive in the palace of Bomasura, and Krishna released them and married them. So in chapter 83 of Krishna book, the chapter is entitled Draupadi Meets the Queens of Krishna. Each of these eight queens, that the original eight queens, each of them tells their story of how they married Krishna. The eight principal queens of Krishna are Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Satya Mitravinda Bhadra, Kalindi, and this Lakshmana, who we're going to hear about now, how Lakshmana became Krishna's wife. Lakshmana said, "My dear queen, many times I have heard that the great sage Narad glorifying the pastimes of Lord Krishna. I became attracted to the lotus feet of Krishna when I heard Narada say that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, was attracted to his lotus feet. Since then, I have always been thinking of him, and thus my attraction for him has increased. My dear Queen Draupadi, my father was very affectionate toward me. When he understood that I was attracted to Krishna, he devised a plan like that devised by your father. During the Swayamvara, the prospective bridegrooms had to pierce the eyes of a fish with their arrows. The difference between the competition in your Swayamvara and mine was that in yours, the fish was hanging openly on the ceiling in clear view. But in mine, the fish was covered and could be seen only by its reflection in a pot of water. That was the special feature of my Swayamvara. The news of this device spread all over the world, and when the princes heard of it, they arrived at my father's capital city from all directions. Fully equipped with armor and guided by their military instructors, each of them desired to win me as his wife. And one after another, they raised the bow and arrow left there for piercing the fish. Many could not even join the bowstring to the ends of the bow, and so without attempting to pierce the fish, they simply left the bow as it was and went away. Some, with great difficulty, drew the string from one end to the other, but being unable to tie the other end, they were suddenly knocked down by the spring-like bow. My dear Queen Draupadi, you will be surprised to know, at my Svayamvara meeting, there were many famous kings and heroes present. Heroes like Jarasandha, Ambashta, Shishupal, Bhimasena, Duryodhana, and Karna. And they were, of course, able to string the bow, but they could not pierce the fish, because it was covered, and they could not trace out from the reflection. The celebrated hero of the Pandavas, Arjuna, was able to see the reflection of the fish on the water. But although with great care he traced out the location of the fish and shot an arrow, he did not pierce the fish in the right spot. But his arrow at least touched the fish, and so he proved himself better than all the other princes. All the princes who tried to pierce the target were disappointed. Being baffled in their attempts, and some candidates even left the place without making an attempt. But when at last Lord Krishna took up the bow, he was able to tie the bowstring very easily, just as a child plays with a toy. He placed the arrow, and looking only once at the reflection of the fish in the water, Krishna shot the arrow, and the pierced fish immediately fell down. This victory of Lord Krishna was accomplished at noon, during the moment called Abhijit, which is astronomically calculated as auspicious. At that time, the vibration of Jai, Jai was heard all over the world, and from the sky came sounds of drums beaten by the denizens of heaven. Great demigods were overwhelmed with joy and showered flowers on the earth. At that time, I entered the arena of competition, and the ankle bells on my legs sounded very melodious as I walked. I was nicely dressed with new silken garments. Flowers decorated my hair, and because of Lord Krishna's victory, I was in ecstatic joy and smiling very pleasingly. I carried in my hands a golden necklace bedecked with jewels, which glittered at intervals. My curling hair encircled my face, which shone with a bright luster due to the reflection of my various earrings. My eyes blinking, I first observed all the princes present, and when I reached my lord, I very slowly placed the golden necklace around his neck. As I have already informed you from the very beginning, my mind was attracted by Lord Krishna, and thus I considered the garlanding of my Lord my great victory. As soon as I placed my garland on the neck of the Lord, there sounded immediately the combined vibration of mridangas, pataha, and anaka drums, conch shells, kettle drums, and other instruments, causing a tumultuous sound. And while the music played, expert male and female dancers began to dance, and singers began to sing sweetly. My dear Draupadi, when I accepted Lord Krishna as my worshipful husband, and he accepted me as his maidservant. There was a tumultuous roaring among the disappointed princes. All of them were very agitated because of their lusty desires. But without caring for them, my husband, and his form as the four-handed Narayan, immediately took me on his chariot, which was drawn by four excellent horses. Expecting opposition from the princes, he armored himself and took up his bow named Sharanga. And then our celebrated driver, Dharuka, drove the beautiful chariot, without a moment's delay, toward the city of Dwarka. Thus, in the presence of all the princes, I was carried away very quickly, exactly as a deer is carried away from the flock by a lion. Some of the princes, however, wanted to check our progress, and thus, equipped with proper weapons, they opposed us, just as dogs tried to oppose the progressive march of a lion. At that time, due to the arrows released by the Sharanga bow of Lord Krishna, some of the princes lost their hands, some of them lost their legs, and some lost their heads and their lives, and others fled from the battlefield. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then entered the most celebrated city of the universe, Dwarka, and as he entered the city, he appeared like the shining sun. The whole city of Dwarka was profusely decorated on that occasion. There were so many flags and festoons and gates all over Dwarka that the sunshine could not even enter the city. I have already told you that my father was very affectionate to me. So when he saw that my desire had been fulfilled by my getting Lord Krishna as my husband, in great happiness, he began to distribute to friends and relatives various kinds of gifts, such as valuable garments, ornaments, bedsteads, and sitting carpets. Lord Krishna is always self-sufficient, yet my father, out of his own accord, offered my husband a dowry consisting of riches, soldiers, elephants, chariots, horses, and many rare and valuable weapons. He presented all these to the Lord with great enthusiasm. My dear Queen, at that time, I could guess that in my previous life, I must have performed some wonderfully pious activity, and as a result, I can in this life be one of the maidservants in the house of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that ends our Krishna book reading for today. When this song finishes, I will play a few of my songs that I have recorded, and in this way end today's class. Tomorrow night, I am doing a program in the evening, and the class will be on Guru Tattva. So that'll be tomorrow night. I'm not sure if I'm going to do a webcast at noon. We'll have to see how I feel. But tomorrow night. And as soon as this song finishes, I will play a few songs from my greatest hits. Thank you very much for attending. I hope you enjoyed the short radio concert in a few seconds.